Howdy there, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. I'm Amelia Dalton from eejournal.com, and this week we're continuing our look at future trends in electronic design. Last week we tackled EDA with the waxing poetic Mike Gianfagna, and this week we're tackling embedded design. So hunker down, get yourself a hot cup of joe, and settle in for our 5-hour fish fry mini-series marathon. Part 1, microcontrollers. Okay, not really. Trends for embedded design for 2013. Well, geez, where do I start? We could chat about the trends in green design, energy harvesting, PCB optimization, gesture control, touchscreens, and what the heck about Windows 8? But no. This week, I'm taking a slice of the bigger embedded design pie and talking about security in particular. Whether you like it or not, security is becoming a bigger concern in just about any kind of design process these days. My guest is Paul Kotcher of Cryptography Research. Paul and I are going to discuss security and the trends in connected devices and why you shouldn't even try to outrun security. It'll get you every time.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Paul.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you, Amelia.
So the last time you were on Fish Fry, we discussed some of the big picture security issues that you had encountered at your work at Cryptography Research. Can you take us through some of the bigger security trends that you're seeing?
Sure. Maybe look at it from a couple different directions. I mean, some things haven't changed at all. I mean, software is still riddled with bugs, and people are building complicated things with no idea how to secure them. So the general state of security is certainly not improving right now. In many ways, the issues, as before, are being driven by Moore's Law, where devices are getting more complicated, and humans aren't getting smarter, and so we're having more and more bugs piling into systems. But there are some areas where some good progress is being made, and one of the things I'll be talking about is how hardware systems are getting more able to deal with some of the problems that software has created, and I think particularly of relevance to your audience is looking at ways that SoCs and chips and devices can be engineered to use some of the capabilities that we're being given through more advanced SoC manufacturing technologies that let us put transistors into chips at almost no cost and use those to deal with some of the problems that otherwise would go unaddressed.
Mm-hmm.
On the risk side, I mean, the compromises of the day, every day you pick up the newspaper and there'll be a handful of publicized vulnerabilities that have been exploited. There are a lot of things that get exploited that also don't get publicized, since the smart attackers obviously don't want publicity being attracted to what they're doing. So from the defense side, it's really a pretty depressing situation right now. And the folks that are attacking systems are really getting what they want. You know, I would describe the security industry as about where medicine was in maybe the 1840s. There are all kinds of things being sold that are supposed to make you feel better but don't necessarily fix the problem. Some things worked and we don't know why, really. Some things that we think worked perhaps don't. I mean, it's not really a particularly mature field. And to use the medical analogy a little further, I mean, the patient outcomes aren't very good right now. In terms of the work that I'm doing and my team is doing, a lot of it focuses on how to deal with this from a reduction of risk or reducing the probability of different kinds of failures perspective, with the idea that you never get your risk down to zero, but there's a big difference between, you know, strapping yourself onto an unproven rocket and lighting the fuse in the back or flying on a modern airplane, and ultimately the end game that we hope to get toward. And both as a company and more generally as an industry, is to make it so it's possible for systems to be safe enough that you feel comfortable taking advantage of the capabilities that they've got and not being afraid of what will go on.
So, Paul, the Internet of Things is a huge trend these days. But let's talk about security in that context. What about the security risks associated with these devices and how those risks can be exploited?
Sure. Well, so there are two major pieces to the risk equation. One is what risks these devices pose to the data that they process. And then the other question is, what are the risks that they pose to devices around them? And those risks can include the compromise of information or denial of service and other kinds of consequences. As you look at these devices, there are three really major challenges that we have with them. One is that we don't have a user interface. So all of the things that you would normally handle on a PC where you'd pop up a user dialog to ask the user to make a decision really don't apply here.
Right.
It also, in many cases, these are devices that aren't as useful as your PC. They're something like a toaster or a picture frame where the internet connectivity provides some smaller benefit. But what that means is that the user isn't going to be willing to spend their weekend reinstalling the operating system and applying device updates and rebooting the thing. They're supposed to have the same kind of reliability profile as a washer dryer or a refrigerator or an automobile today. So the hassles that we are willing to tolerate in the name of security on other devices are not acceptable here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third issue, and in some ways it's the most serious one, is that we don't have the infrastructure or the business model to fund the continuous management of vulnerabilities that we have in other kinds of environments.
Mm-hmm.
So on your PC or your tablet or your smartphone, there's somebody who's getting either recurring monthly billed revenue or somebody who's going to get a series of upgrades from the user and get revenue from those, which helps fund the security work. But the typical device model is you go and you buy a toaster and the transaction is done and there's no recurring revenue for the toaster manufacturer. So what traditionally has happened with those devices is the engineering team that works on the product gets it to a point where it's ready to ship and then goes works on other things. So there isn't the manpower or the money to handle security there in a way that it gets dealt with.
So from an engineering point of view, what do you think are the steps that should be taken to limit security risks in Wi-Fi-enabled products?
Well, so if you're working on a device, one of the first things that you can start looking at is how to separate the complicated things that aren't critical from the hopefully simple things that are critical. And the more you can separate those, the less work you're going to have reducing your security risks and the lower the overall risk will be. So it means that, for example, if you have a complicated SoC with a whole lot of software running on it, maybe considering putting a little bit of hardware that handles the critical security functions that is separate from that large CPU. Another piece of it involves trying to figure out whether there are business models or deployment models that can at least allow the mitigation of problems as they arise. Because when you ship that Wi-Fi connected device, for example, there likely will be some bugs there if you're using off-the-shelf software stacks and so forth. And at least having some kind of plan for what you're going to do as those occur is really important.
Okay, Paul, how about an off-the-cuff question? I know you're a big fan of puzzles. What's your favorite puzzle?
You know, my favorite puzzles are the ones where you work on the puzzle for a long time and you get frustrated and you decide the thing is impossible. And then you figure it out, and then afterwards it's obvious that you should have been a solution to it. The job that I have, I'm doing because I love puzzles. And
sure.
Security systems really are kind of a neat puzzle because you've got a puzzle designer who's the person that built a thing who thinks that they've produced this complicated system that's hard to break. And when we're doing an evaluation, our job is to figure out the path that goes through the puzzle. And, you know, I hope over time the puzzles that I'm dealing with are going to get more frustrating, not less frustrating. So it's
Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today, Paul.
Thank you very much, Amelia. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, folks, I've got another interview lined up for you this week, but this is not your average fish frying speaker. Oh, no. I've got something special this week. As most of you know, I have given out hundreds of nerdy giveaway prizes over the last 2 years on Fish Fry. And most of the time, in order to win, you need to tell me what kind of cool project you would create with the development kit I was giving away that week. Well, it's time to check back in on those projects. This week, I'm talking with one of my nerdy giveaway winners, Louis Rufino, about the cool new project he's working on that will incorporate both a Raspberry Pi board and his brand new Spartan 6 LX9 microboard, courtesy of Xilinx. So welcome, Louis. Thank you so much for joining me today. So you won a Spartan 6 LX9 microboard recently. Congratulations. I heard that you were planning a project that involved a Raspberry Pi board and the LX9 microboard. Tell me more about this project.
Yes. You remember you did an article about the mannequins watching people
uh-huh.
and judging through the video analytics what they might be interested in. And I think I made some comments about how you could use that same methodology to view people who might be in distress or who might be unable to speak. On the other hand, the Raspberry Pi is very soon going to have a camera accessory, which is going to be provided by the Raspberry Pi Foundation. So the Raspberry Pi will soon have eyes. And given that it has eyes, new vision applications will appear. The ones I am particularly interested in my projects, as you put it before, are vision-guided robotics. Now, the point of vision-guided robotics is that you have to find within the frame that you've captured the points of interest, such as a target that you might want to follow, or a line that you might want to follow, or an obstacle that you might want to avoid. All of those things involve very heavy-duty image processing, and that cannot really be done with the Raspberry Pi, since it's a general-purpose processor. However, when you program the LX9 to go zipping through the frame buffer, you can get many orders of magnitude improvement in the tracking and responsiveness of the vision-guided robot. So that is the goal. Using an FPGA as a co-processor is very cost-effective. Given that the Raspberry Pi is a $35 item and the camera is going to be a $25 item, we're now talking the guts of a robot for well under $100. And again, we're only talking 2012.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today, Lewis.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck. And thanks a lot for the LX9. That was a great gift.
And how about a little stocking stuffer? Now, folks, what would be better than one geeky stocking stuffer? Well, two, of course. But what about a whole store dedicated to geeky stocking stuffers? And no, I'm not talking about Brookstone. But seriously, if I had about $10 million, that store would be mine. No, Amelia's Geeky Stocking Stuffer is brought to you by the Pi Store. That's right, the same Raspberry Pi computer that Lewis was speaking of earlier, and now there's a whole online store dedicated to this mighty and tiny computer. This new Raspberry Pi store has all sorts of cool stuff. Games, apps, tutorials, and dev tools. So if you want to get me something special from this site, I was looking at that Iridium Rising game. It's a 3D multiplayer space combat game that looks pretty cool. And now it's time for a little nerdy giveaway, everyone. This week I have a brand new nerdy giveaway. I have a Zed board, courtesy of Xilinx. Now, a Zed board is a complete development kit for designers interested in exploring using Xilinx's Zynq 7000 all-programmable SoC. The board contains all the necessary interfaces and supporting functions to enable a wide range of applications. The expandability features of the board make it ideal for rapid prototyping and proof-of-concept development. So, what's included in this super cool kit? It includes a Zed board, a 12-volt power supply, a micro USB cable, a USB adapter, 4 gigabit SD card, Xilinx ISC Webpack software with a device locked chip scope license, a getting started guide, and a downloadable documentation and reference designs. So, if you want one of these awesome kits of your very own, just post a comment on this week's page and please include what super cool design you would create with it. Get posting, guys. This Zed board is super cool. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, including that Raspberry Pi store, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, shoot me a line at amelia@techfocusmedia.com or post a comment on our forums on eejournal.com. For the week of December 21st, 2012, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.